to Heal, episode 4 with Laura Porter. On today's show, we're going to be talking about college life and mental health, specifically substance abuse and eating disorders, two issues that, as you all know, face many young people today. So I'm 30 and I'm in college. I think we've all changed our perspective on people that go to school. There's all ages in school nowadays. We've got people that are 70 and 80 going back to school. But what about when you're struggling with an eating disorder or when you're dealing with an addiction, you're trying to go through school? What's that like? So our guest today is going to be talking about what she went through in her first few semesters of going to college and what that was like for her and how she was able to transition and actually inspire other young people on campus and inspired me too. I'm on track on getting my PhD, hopefully one day, but when I was 18, 19, 20, that wasn't the case. And I tried to go to school twice and it was very difficult for me. I had to drop out of school because of my addiction to alcohol and drugs and my eating disorders. So I also had a dysfunctional family, and a combination of everything that I was going through just made me feel hopeless. So now, many years later, I'm in strong recovery and I'm 4 years sober from alcohol and drugs and 2.5 years in recovery from my eating disorder. And school doesn't seem to present all of these overwhelming challenges that it once did. But yet, I have to make sure that I practice self-care every single day, because if I don't, it's very easy to slip. So I'm very excited to talk to today's guest. She's someone who not only inspires me, but many young people to speak out against the issues in school that otherwise would seem shameful. Laura Porter is a student at George Washington University, majoring in political communication with a minor in psychology. I'll give her props to that. That's my major. After taking 3 semesters off of school for her own mental health struggles, Laura became passionate about advocating for increased awareness of mental illness among college students, specifically eating disorder awareness. Laura served as president of Students Promoting Eating Disorder Awareness and Knowledge at GW, which is short for Speak GW, as well as communications intern at Active Minds, Inc. So Laura, thank you for coming on to the show. I'm so happy to have you on today.
Thanks so much for having me, Nikki. This is going to be a great conversation, and I'm so excited.
It really is. I'm just so happy to see you. I know we last saw each other at the NIDA conference this year in San Diego, and it was such a joy to finally meet you. I know we've been connected on Twitter.
Yeah, exactly. Don connected us.
Don Blackwell, for those of you who don't know, he's the author of the book Dear Ashley, a very inspiring book as well. It's a story of his love for his daughter Ashley as she was battling anorexia nervosa, and he introduced Laura and I. So Laura, you've really become quite a leader on campus and a role model for young people, really for everyone, because, you know, we all have to go through school, you know, and we all know what it's like, even for those of us who don't have an eating disorder or don't deal with substance abuse or alcoholism. We all know what it's like to feel bad about ourselves and to feel ashamed of different issues. So, you know, college can be a difficult time for so many. Why don't you tell us more about who you are and how you came to be in this leadership position at school?
I began struggling with my eating disorder really my freshman year. So I had experienced disordered eating in high school, and it was the way I was using food and trying to change my body was to change the way that I was feeling. And I had this kind of underlying sense of not being enough, not being good enough, smart enough, pretty enough, what have you. And the eating disorder became a way to help me, one, distract really from what I was feeling and those uncomfortable emotions. And also to feel like if only I changed what I looked like or changed something about me and made myself pretty thin, what have you, then I would be happy. So it was trying to change my outsides to fit my insides. And the alcohol really played into that. So I like to describe it as kind of a whack-a-mole situation. And when my eating disorder was especially strong, then the alcohol kind of subsided, but they would pop up differently. And that they were all symptoms of an underlying issue. So I struggled with depression and anxiety. And the alcohol was a way to take that anxiety, those racing thoughts in my head, to take them out for a temporary time. And eventually it just became my life. I was destroying my life. I wasn't connected with people. I really disliked myself, and it became a mental illness. So the way I describe it, or the way I think about it, is that, sure, some people can have this disordered eating. Some people can use food to try and shape their body and look a certain way so that they hopefully, or what in their minds they think will allow them to accept themselves, which I thought at a time. And then there was something in my brain that just switched, and that I think of as my genetic predisposition to alcoholism and an eating disorder. And I wasn't in control. I wasn't making my own decisions. I was really taken over by these diseases. And my life just quickly spiraled out of control. I was drinking. It became a daily thing when I woke up in the morning, and I woke up one morning in what was supposed to be my sophomore year, and I was shaking and having withdrawals, and I had to drink before I was going to go to my 9:35 class, and I was really scared. My therapist, this was in 2011, she recommended that I go to treatment. And at that point, I was terrified of going to treatment and getting help and letting go of the alcohol and the eating disorder. But I was more afraid of where my life was going and where I saw it going. And I didn't think that I would make it to the end of college if I didn't get help. I was in and out of treatment, like Nikki said, for 3 semesters. I took time off, and through that time, I really felt like I could be myself. And when I first went to treatment, it was the first time that I could be open with people about what I was going through, and I really felt like I could be authentic. And there was this community of people who knew what it was like to struggle. And that was something that I didn't have before. No one was really talking about eating disorders. And my friends would make jokes of like, Laura, you're an alcoholic. But it was always this kind of laughable thing. No one was really serious about it. And when I went to treatment, it was just like, oh my gosh, I'm not crazy and I'm not alone. And that progressed to show me that there were so many people affected, and that the shame was so high, and the self stigma of thinking I can't talk about this because it's going to make me look weak, or people are going to judge me. And with eating disorders, there's especially a stigma of it's just a vanity thing, and it's self-obsession and absorption. When in reality, however we form a relationship with food and with our bodies in our eating disorder, that's a symptom, and that's a manifestation of what's really going on inside us. And for me, it started off as about my body, but then it became a way, I mean, either to numb out, to express my emotions. It wasn't really about my body anymore. And so when I went back to school, I really worked incredibly hard to get back to school, because that was my kind of like guiding light, thinking, this is what I want to do. I want to finish school. And so I went back in the spring of 2013. And in that December before I went back in 2012, I had been living in a sober house that summer of 2012. And a friend I knew passed away of an overdose. And it was really hard for me, because that was really the first person I was close to who had passed away from the disease of addiction. And I just felt like, this isn't fair. I felt grateful that I was lucky. I say I'm one of the lucky ones. And I know there it's a combination of work and stuff, but I think people don't pass away from these diseases because they don't want to recover. It's not giving up or anything like that. It was so disheartening, and I wanted so badly to remember him and to carry on his story, so that people would find some sort of hope, and maybe the hope that he needed at the time and the hope that I needed when I was struggling. And so I went back to school, and I started to get back into schoolwork and stuff like that. And after a little while, I was like, where is this community that I had when I was in treatment? And I knew that there were people in school who were affected by eating disorders, alcoholism, addiction, depression, anxiety, any kind of mental health condition. And so that summer, I decided that I really wanted to recreate that community. And kind of my big motivation was to be the person that I needed when I was younger. So I started this organization, Speak GW. I relaunched it and kind of turned it into this awareness initiative and really an educational. There was a big educational aspect, because for me, the idea of I wanted to break the stigma of eating disorders and really help people try and understand the complexities of this illness. And so I started sharing my story. The reason I share my story is because if one person in whatever audience I'm sharing can find some sort of hope in that story and take away that isolation and feeling like, oh, someone else is going through this and that recovery is possible, that's really why I do what I do. And it's been such an incredible experience. And we've built this community on campus of young men and women who are learning to be open and learning to find this community. And I really feel like it's an incredible time to be advocating for mental health awareness, education, because there's a growing movement of people who are standing up and saying, hey, I struggle with this, and that doesn't mean I'm broken. It doesn't mean that there's something wrong with me. I'm actually stronger because I went through this. And it's really cool, especially to see the younger, I call them the younger generations of Speak, come through and start to share about their experiences and to stand up in front of an audience and say, this is what I went through, and it's not perfect. Recovery is totally up and down, and I take it day by day. But that my worst day in recovery is so much better than my best day not in recovery.
I love that. My worst day in recovery is better than my best day not in recovery. It's so true. I love what you're doing. I mean, wow, your story is incredible. Or it really, really is. And I love how you do, you know, claim and take ownership that these are, in fact, diseases of the mind and mental illnesses. Because I think there is still somewhat of an ongoing debate about that. So how do you find that on campus people are, do they debate about that? Is there a conversation about that?
So a lot of times I feel like I'm consistently confronting this misunderstanding that people have, not just about eating disorders, but about addiction, about particularly suicidality. I attempted suicide in September of 2012, and so grateful that I'm here today.
And so grateful that you're here today.
Thank you. And I've seen a lot going on with GW lately about people wanting to act and wanting to do something to address mental health, particularly students on campus. And I think there's still a long way to go in terms of understanding. I think the idea of anonymity still exists a lot, which, you know, is helpful for people to feel like they have a safe space. And also, our goal with Speak and my goal and my personal life is to create an environment where people don't necessarily feel the need for total anonymity, and that they feel just like if you have a cold and someone's like, oh, you sound sick, like, how are you doing? Can I get you anything? That people are like, hey, what's going on? Like, you don't seem like yourself today, and I just wanted to check in. Where those, the physical and mental illnesses are addressed the same way in college, and that there's, we don't have to hide out in rooms and create, you know, kind of a secret environment. And I think we do have a ways to go, but I'm hopeful because I see students who are involved in Speak, who are involved in collegiate recovery programs, sharing their stories openly. And in my personal experience, I've had a lot of people who I haven't talked to in years, message me, send me an email saying, wow, like, thank you for sharing this because I struggle too. It's hard being confronted, I would say daily, with misunderstandings and comments from professors who, there are really understanding professors and ones who just get it. And then there are some who, not out of maliciousness, just don't have a full understanding. And the way I approach it is that it's an opportunity to educate, that when you have a conversation with someone who is willing to be open about their illnesses or their struggles, then it's really hard to have a distant view and to think, you know, to talk about it in terms of, like, I know none of you guys have this problem, and to kind of make comments because you have that personal connection and you know that even though the statistics show that, you know, out of a group of 20 students, there's probably 4 or 5 in your class who struggle with a mental health condition. But to really hit that home and to have that conversation with someone who is telling you and explaining to you in a way that is human and that you can have that human connection I think, is really where the education happens. And through my experience, I've had good experiences with some professors and others, I think still have places to learn, but it's still valuable to have those conversations. And with students too, I think there's still a tendency to approach it as this problem out there in the abstract and a sense of, we need to support people with mental illness rather than this is all something. You know, we all have mental health, and as a community, we want to create a conversation. And having that kind of, like, I'm not affected, but we should support people who are affected, I think is hard because it's, in a way, it perpetuates a stigma of the idea of a savior kind of thing, right? That people with mental illness can't help themselves, so we have to, right, you know, pick them up. So I think the biggest thing for me is that one of the goals of sharing my story is to really empower people, and that's been my goal with Speak, is to show people that I'm not some special person, that you can share your story too, and it's a ripple effect. When I share my story and I'm open, then other people can see, oh, I can share this too, and really feel okay. And then they touch more lives, and more people feel like they can talk about it. And so I think that's what's incredibly important for me, is to emphasize that I'm human, and that there isn't anything about my story that, or about what I do, that someone else can't do. And we all have power in our stories, and that even the smallest thing can have an impact. And it's that human connection and the willingness to be vulnerable. Brené Brown, who I
love her.
She's amazing, talks about kind of the way that vulnerability breeds vulnerability. And it also breeds compassion and connection, because I think when we have our guards up and we're not willing to be open about the fact that, you know, if we're standing up in front of a room of people and we're nervous, and we try and block that and be this kind of perfect person, then other people, I think that hinders our ability to connect with other people. Right. Because if I'm being open, I'm like, yeah, it's a really hard day, then someone else is like, oh, I have hard days too. And it's, yeah, it allows us for that human connection. And there's, I don't think there's anything as perfect. I look at it rather than perfect and imperfect as human and robot.
So we take off that. I think it's like something that we form in development.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we try to be perfect. Again, the perfectionism is a big, right, character flaw that a lot of us share. But in recovery, we kind of learn that we don't have to have that. And if we just be ourselves, then we're going to have a much better time of developing genuine relationships with people,
yeah,
and with ourselves.
Yeah.
As well.
Being authentic and being able to say, this is me. That's what I love. Being able to present myself to the world in an authentic way,
yes,
unapologetically.
Would you say that on campus, that it's kind of the students, the teachers, and the professors that all kind of are misinformed equally?
I think there are students who know what it's like to struggle with a mental illness. And I know the community around me knows what it's like. And there are definitely some who are misinformed, and who just kind of see it as a distant, this doesn't happen to me, this doesn't happen to my friends. But I also think there's kind of this silent group that knows what it's like to have a friend or to live with a mental health condition themselves, but who may not feel ready, or they may not want to talk about it in a public forum, or they might have their group of friends where they talk about it, but the communication isn't necessarily, you know, social media and in large public spaces. But that's what I hope, and I'm not. I have a feeling that that's pretty accurate. The louder voices
speak for the silent ones. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that there's also, you know, there's always going to be those more vocal people who may not totally get it. But as long as they're trying, like, I think the willingness to admit, I don't know everything, and I don't know everything, but I think with good intentions and being willing to admit that they, you know, that they don't know maybe what it's like to live with a mental health condition, or they don't fully understand, and I myself do that as well, because there are things that, you know, I only know my own experience, and I've only lived that, and that's what I have to offer. And the willingness to learn from other people and admit that you don't have all the answers is what I think will help with misunderstanding and misinformation. And that goes back to the vulnerability part, but just willing to admit that you don't have all the answers.
You don't have all the answers, especially in college when you're, you know, you have so much going on and you feel like you want to have all the answers.
Right.
Because you have, you know, tests and you have exams and you're learning so many different things, and you also want to make friends and you're trying to figure out what you want to do.
Yeah.
So what... Did you ever think that your life would be used as an example?
No. I really had no idea that this would be my path. But once I started down the road to getting into recovery and meeting people who had similar stories, like I think our stories are very similar, and being able to connect with those people, I started to, I don't know, I didn't want I wanted to find meaning in my own experience. And a lot of it was going back to that being that person that I needed. And it's incredibly healing for me, because I'm able to not only be that person, hopefully, for other people who are in a similar situation that I was when I was struggling, but I'm also able to look back and with compassion and say, you know, that was a really hard time in my life, and I was hurting, and that I didn't choose to have this. It's kind of like comforting that younger me, and being able to show her the love that I think I was looking for.
You didn't have all the answers, but kind of in your struggles, it worked itself out.
Yeah.
In its own way. It's kind of like saying to your younger self, it's okay.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I've always kind of had this, since I was younger, I have had this this sense that I need to fight against injustice. My dad likes to tell this story of when I was in the fifth grade. My music teacher was being my friends told me that my music teacher was being mean to them. And so I went up to him, little fifth grader, and was like, you know, I've heard that my friends feel like, I don't even know what I said, but it was like, I feel like you're not being nice to my friends and I wish that you would treat them better. And I got in trouble for that. But it's a story that I think correlates so well with my story today, and this kind of idea that we see a group being marginalized, that I have this strong need to be not a spokesperson, but to share my own story and be like, hey, we can get better, and that we don't deserve the stigma and we don't deserve the kind of treatment that I think is so common of, oh, like, we can't touch this, we can't touch emotions, we kind of push that to the side. So I lost a couple friends to these diseases. It's a huge part of why I tell my story. Because I just, it's the way that I make meaning and kind of carry their stories with me, but I don't talk about their stories, but to be able to kind of honor them in my own mind of thinking, you know, they may have passed, but we are working, we're all working in the awareness and advocacy field to honor them and to really spread awareness and to tell our stories in a way that my hope is that there will be that community of support and that open conversation, that no one feels alone. When I attempted, I was just thinking, I want the pain to stop. And I felt so lonely. And for me, that was a huge aspect of why I just didn't want to live anymore. Because I felt like no one else knew what it was like. And I think just being able to say, you're not alone, you're not in this by yourself, and provide that, even if it's a brief glimpse of hope that people can hold on to, I think is really, it's why I do what I do.
So what would you say to somebody who is struggling with substance abuse or alcoholism or an eating disorder?
You aren't weak, and that this doesn't define you. What you're going through now doesn't define you, and your struggles don't define who you are, and that keep fighting. And I know it may not seem like it right now, but there definitely is a light, and that the world needs you here. Yeah. And you are strong despite what you may think, and some days are going to be really crappy, and from my experience, it gets hard before it gets easier. But that you will see the benefits and the promises of recovery, and this will make you strong, and you are strong for fighting, and just know that you're not alone.
Absolutely. And so as we're wrapping this up, I wanted to ask you, what advice would you have for, you know, young people who want to make a difference on campus?
Yeah, I would say definitely what I did was I talked with my administrators. I really made connections in that. And to share your story, whatever it may be, And it doesn't have to be in a room full of people. It can be with with a friend, with someone in your class, or if you see that you are in class and your professor makes some kind of comment, that if you feel comfortable going up to them and saying, "Hey, you know, this is my experience," and not, you don't have to be critical, just say, "I just wanted to let you know that, like, this affected me in this way." Just know that you may face some pushback, but being open with someone, however open you want to be, you will also find that there is that connection and that you will make a difference in someone's life and that it has a ripple effect. And it doesn't take, you know, a big awareness initiative to make change on your campus. Change can just start with sharing you and sharing your experience.
Thank you so much, Laura, for coming on to the show. And we're going to have the links up here for, you know, to find you. Do you have a website or?
So it's speakgw.com.
Well, that resumes our Speak to Hill episode number 4 with Laura Porter. And happy Thanksgiving. It's coming up really soon. It's right around the corner. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I hope you have a lovely day. Mm-hmm.